Hello and welcome to the sixth episode of the Derailed Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fred.
I was going to say I'm Conductor Chris, and then I thought that was too lame even for this.
No, come on.
Even for this podcast. Yeah, so today we wanted to talk about 18 Rhineland.
Yes.
Which we played last week, Thursday.
That's right, yes.
Today being Wednesday, sorry. Yes. You have no time of point of reference for that. Yeah, so Fred, what were your thoughts on 18 Rhineland?
I enjoyed it. There's a lot to it though, like lots of extra little bits that we haven't really seen in the ones that we've played before. So I think that makes the rules explanation a little bit like lengthy.
I think we both felt that it was almost like a step up in complexity from what we've played before.
Yes.
Like it felt like a little bit advanced mode 18XX.
Yeah, I think the core of it is still the same, though. It's just there are bits of different ways you can earn some money, and the thing that's I think potentially easy to forget is the way the capitalization works, where initially it's partial cap, and then after, when is it? The sixth train.
The five train.
The five train. After the five train is bought, then it becomes full cap. So I'm not sure if I'm a fan of that. I mean, it makes for some interesting situations, but it's also something that's easy to forget and, you know, overlook, and then you've messed up the whole game after
a bunch of trains. I was so intrigued by that concept that I was just constantly waiting for the five train, you know. Because well, I think good, in our game, I was very on top of it. I was like, okay, guys, full cap now.
Yes, you were. And if you hadn't said it, I would have forgotten about it. So I think, I think that's a potential easy thing to forget, and then that kind of ruins the game almost. I don't know if it would ruin the game, but I mean, you've played for a good hour by then, and then, you know.
Yeah, well, we played for an hour.
You made a massive mistake, so yeah.
Yeah, but in some ways, it's also probably the most interesting niggle in that game, because I've never seen that before, and I don't know if that's a regular thing, but for me, that was super weird. And somehow, I even missed that when I read the rules for the first time.
Oh, okay.
I guess because it's 18XX, I was kind of like skimming over for the differences and stuff, and it was like floats at 50%, so I'm like, yeah, cool, floats at 50%. Never thinking that it could float at 50% and then be partial cap.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how it works necessarily in other games, but in 1846 it's partial cap, but it floats the second you buy the president's share.
Yeah, it floats immediately at 20% effectively, yeah.
And that's kind of the point of the partial cap in that way, in that you can slowly invest in more shares.
Yes.
This one is partial, but you still have to put in 50%.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, which, I mean, that's interesting. So just to get back on what we thought of the game, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very cool. I'm still think Cologne is my favorite, but I still think there's some stuff we probably haven't discovered in this one.
Yeah, this felt like, I mean, it was fun in terms of rules and stuff. It's not that we struggled.
No.
But I almost felt strategically, I was like, yo, were we ready? I think that's part of the fun of 18XX, right? Is that you don't really know what you're doing. And
yeah,
it felt like a fun game. It didn't feel like we were all terrible or anything. Well,
no, it's the discovery is part of it. So discovering and exploring what all these new rules mean and how they affect the gameplay is part of the fun of the game, I think. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that we like exploring new ones, but very much feel that we also don't need to.
Yes.
I think every 18XX we have between us, we'd be happy to play repeatedly and uncover more of it and figure out how it ticks even more.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, yeah. Yeah.
And I think you get, you basically get unlimited replayability out of most of these.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, so this one just felt like, yo, there's actually a lot different here.
Mm.
There's a lot going on. And it's so unassuming as well. Mm. So I bought this game for two reasons. One, because it was highly recommended. And the other being it was the cheapest game on Marflow's website.
Oh, okay.
So this one and Cologne are the two cheapest ones, actually.
Okay.
And Cologne kind of makes sense. It's like 2 to 4 players. And you kind of get that feeling. But this game also, I mean, you open the box, there's not really anything new in there. It doesn't have all these extra bits.
No, component-wise, it looks like any other 18XX.
Yeah, and you think that you're in for, I thought it was going to be basically a similar map to Cologne, because it also has the Rhine River going down the center.
Yes.
So I thought it was going to be similar to that, but more traditional 18XX with a few more like offboard routes and bonuses and things like that. And then once we got into the rules, there were all these not necessarily small changes, but they didn't require any different components or anything. It was just
it's different,
in how you play it.
Yes, just the way. There's also that one interesting company that when it floats, some of its shares move to the open market immediately, and that money gets, is kind of like a bonus paid to the bank when a route is connected, which is interesting. That's new. There was one corporation that had three certificates of two shares each.
Yeah.
That's also new, which is also interesting. Yeah, just lots of little things like that. I mean,
moving from partial cap to full cap was obviously super weird.
Yeah.
We'd never seen that before.
But very cool. I thought that was very interesting.
It was very interesting. I liked the way it changed the game, because I realized that it means that when the fives come, you're in for a big train rush.
Yes.
Because people can float a new company and suddenly they're on full cap.
Yeah.
So they are flush with cash.
Yeah, they can immediately buy trains, big trains. Yeah.
And I felt like it was quite a cash-rich game for the most part.
It was. So just thinking about the scores, our scores were higher. I think the highest scores we've had in an 18XX.
I think so
yet.
Too.
Yes, yeah.
So initially I looked at the bank and I thought that's quite a lot bigger than Cologne in 1889. I think the bank was around just under 10K.
Mm-hmm.
So Cologne, for reference, is I think about 7. I know that 1889 is 7K as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a little bit bigger, so I thought maybe it'll take a little bit longer. I think it did take a little bit longer, but I think that's more because of all the rules and extra stuff.
Yes.
But I think the reason the bank is bigger is because you're actually getting paid more.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot of bonuses to go around.
Yes. The routes, on average, are probably pay more than they do in some of the other ones we've played.
Yeah, absolutely. And then once you start linking those bonuses together, because there's a lot of different bonuses for connecting different parts of the map.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm taking that into account for the route, how much the route pays. So I think because of all those things, it pays more than an average route on
another
18XX that we've played.
Yeah, so some of the bonuses, there's one that goes north to south, and you need a special 8 train in order to do that.
Yeah, none of us ever got that one.
No, we didn't.
We were all kind of aiming for it and working towards it, but we never got there.
I think I gave up on it. I was focused on other stuff. There's a east to west route. There's routes that have steel mills and coal mills.
Yes.
Which is also quite interesting because some of them are on the map to start, but there's a steel mill and a coal mill that goes down in semi-random spots.
Yeah.
I say semi-random because they're configured, so there's like 10 different configurations and you pick one of them based on a random draw.
Yeah, it's like a pair.
If
your random number is 3, then the steel goes here and the coal goes there, kind of thing. So it's always paired, yeah.
And I think that's so you don't end up with any broken combinations where they're right next to each other and one company floats right next to them and it just sets you up for this whole thing. In addition to that, the trains skip towns.
Yes, that's interesting. They still get paid for the towns, but they don't. That doesn't count as a stop towards the trains, the train number.
Yeah, so I've seen in a lot of games that comes out as a plus X train. So it'll be like 3 plus X, which means 3 cities plus any number of towns. But in this game, all the trains did it, so they just labeled them all as normal and you just skip towns, basically.
Yeah, and isn't there, I think it's, is it 1846 that has the like 6/4 or something like that?
Yes.
Where you can run past 6 stops, but you count 4 of them.
Yes,
and you can
yeah.
choose which 4. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of similar, I guess.
Yeah, so that's another thing that adds to the values of your routes is that the towns don't really slow you down. They're actually just a bonus value.
Yeah, yeah.
So towns can actually be a bit of a roadblock sometimes in other games.
Yes.
Like you think you want them, but then they start getting in the way.
No, yeah, they pay very little, especially later in the game. Yeah.
Mm, and then they sort of get in the way of your routes. But here, you didn't have that problem. So towns were just gravy.
Yes, yeah. Gravy train.
Can't believe I set you up for that.
Too easy.
Yeah, that's a pun you couldn't miss.
Yeah. So shall we talk about how our play in particular went a bit?
Yeah. Okay. Let's try and remember.
So I made some notes. I made notes the next day afterwards because
it's
almost a week since we played. So it was you, me, and Simon. So a 3-player game. So I just made some notes of a couple of interesting things that happened. So the first interesting thing that happened was you floated the Brown Company.
Yes.
Then dumped it on Simon. And then Simon kind of struggled with it for a little bit. And he actually, it cost him some opportunity, I think. But it didn't make him, it wasn't too big of a pain for him. But did he have to put money into it? Can you remember?
Oh, when he got it from, after I dumped it on him.
Yeah, did he have to put up personal money to buy a train or anything? Or did he buy a train from his other corporation? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. I think he must have invested some assets into it because he was quite focused on the Brown company.
He was. I think he might have actually... He probably bought a train from one of his other companies with that one, I would guess. And then you kind of... You took the Brown company back from him, like with hostile takeover. You just... Yes. As soon as it started recovering again, because when you sold it, its share price fell a bit. And then I think... Oh, it did withhold a few times, I think.
Yes.
That's right. It did withhold. So the share price fell again. And then you bought the shares back again. And Simon didn't have enough money to keep up if he wanted to. So you took the Brown company back from him.
Yeah, I remember that because it was really good for me because I sold at 135 and then I rebought it at 90.
Yes.
And in that time, I didn't even miss out on revenues because he was withholding.
Yeah. So that was a really, really good play. Yeah, anything else you want to say about that?
So I'm trying to remember how many times that company changed hands.
It was just that, well, it started with you and then to Simon and then back to you. That was it for that one.
Was it? Okay. Because yeah. There's one that he, you, or did you dump a company on me?
I dumped two, did I dump two companies on you?
Oh, I think I got one each from each of you, perhaps.
I dumped one company on you, I think. Yeah, I dumped one company on
you. That was really bad for me.
Yeah, that was the Purple Company. So yeah, the Purple Company is also interesting because it's... President Share is part of the like first private company auction.
Yes.
And that's the one where the bank puts up this bonus to complete the route. So basically you just buy the President Share, it's 20%, and then 30% goes to the open market and that money goes, like you just put it on the side of the board. As soon as the route is connected, I can't remember the name of the route, but it's like two or three tiles worth. As soon as that's connected, the bank pays that bonus out to the company. So those three shares that are moved to the open market are considered sold because the money for them is out of the bank as well. So the company floats immediately. So that sounded interesting to me. So I bought that company during the initial auction, floated it immediately, but it actually took me a while to get it up and running.
I'm curious what the strategy for that company is because that company struggled and never really amounted to anything.
It didn't do massive things, but I think the fact that it's so easy to float is good. And I also later realized, so because of the partial cap, it's that thing we spoke about in another episode where you don't normally want people to buy your shares in a partial cap game because then your company doesn't earn the dividend payments
right.
from the shares sold. So in a partial, in this one as well, any unsold shares still at the bank pay to the company itself.
Yes.
So you kind of want the shares there and then sell them later once the share price is up. But it took me a round or two to realize that those shares in the open market, so I didn't buy more shares in this company. I just bought the 20% and left the other shares there. But then I realized those shares in the open market, I can buy them without affecting the dividend payments to the treasury. So I started buying them and I think you might have bought one as well. And I think Simon might have bought one as well. So I kind of waited a little too long with that. I mean, normally you would get a chance to buy them anyway, but I don't think any of us really realized that. So we kind of left them there.
It is interesting because in 1846, the third, fourth, and fifth share hurt your company.
Yes.
But in this, they don't because...
For this one company, yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. Actually, for any company, they don't because you have to buy that many shares anyway. It right. only floats at 50%.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So this okay. company is cool in that the bank pays to float it.
Mm.
And you get that money. So you don't have to put up a lot of your own personal cash, like you say, in order to yeah. float this company. So, I mean, I guess... That company didn't necessarily do great things for you, but you got your money out of it.
I think I did. And even though it only floats, it only gets 20% of the money when you float it. That's still enough to buy a two train at the beginning of the game. So, I think it never did fantastic, but that is also the company that I then later dumped on you.
Yes.
Which I was super nervous about. That, I think, was a key point in the game.
It's the second time you've dumped something on me that I should have seen coming.
Yeah. Should pay attention.
I don't know why I wasn't thinking about it. I think it's maybe because it might have been your only company
at the time. It was my only company at the time, yeah.
Yeah, so I think again, right, it's being stuck in a particular metagame or thought pattern where it's sort of like you have your one company and you want that one company to succeed. So I kind of wasn't really watching it very closely. I mean, I even joked with you that it was kind of struggling without realizing that you can dump this struggling piece of crap on me. You know, because I had two shares in it, but I just never really considered it. I thought you were going to try bring it back. And I think to some extent that shows, again, I know I say this a lot, but I think it shows how you in this example have kind of matured as a player. Because I think that if we were still back in playing 1846 or whatever it was, our first one, your goal, and this is that kind of Euro mindset, would have been like, okay, I need to
bring this
company back. I'm going to make this work. I'm going to, how am I going to, and your whole mind and strategy would have been around resurrecting this company and making it do well. Instead, you're like, I'm invested for three shares. I'm going to dump this crap and start a new one.
But also, so I never actually withheld once with that company. So the share price did go up. So when I did dump it on you, that at that point, I had enough money to float two companies. So I sold, I dumped that company, got money in, and then I floated two companies.
Yeah, exactly, right? And that's, I mean, that is really what you're supposed to do in 18XX. I mean, that's, in a lot of ways, pretty standard, right? That's what you do. When a company's not performing well, if you've got an opportunity to get rid of it and start something new, you do, because new companies are great. Yes. They start with all this capital. You can connect to an existing rail route. There's a lot of stuff that you can do. You're not necessarily starting from scratch.
Yes.
But I think that I was still a little bit stuck in that Euro mindset in my evaluation of it, because I was just like, okay, yeah, you're going to, you're going to resurrect this company, and I'm going to hang on to the shares because I got them for cheap. The stock price is going up.
Yes.
It hasn't paid a lot of dividends, but it's fine. And then suddenly, there you go, this is yours, and the train's about to rust, and good luck, buddy.
Yeah, so I floated two new companies then, and I think I might have, it might have taken me two stock rounds to float the second one. I might have just floated the one in the first, in the stock round that I dumped that one. I can't remember. But it bought a semi-permanent train. I think it bought a five train. The sixes were permanent, right?
Yeah, fives and fives are permanent as well.
Oh, were they permanent? Okay.
I think in a lot of games, fives are the first permanent.
Oh, right. Okay. So did it buy a four then? I can't remember the company I floated after I dumped that one. It might have bought a four, which is rested by...
Only by the diesel,
Diesel, the eight.
The eight, yeah.
Yeah. So, which never happened, I don't think.
Oh, it happened.
Oh, it did happen at the end. Yeah, it did happen it at did the happen. End. But by that time, I made another plan. Yeah, so I think it bought a four train, which lasted for a while. And then I think the next stock round, I floated the other company and bought a five train with that one. Or even two five trains. I bought two five trains. The five trains were 500 each, were they?
Or like 450 or something. The five trains are always nice because they're kind of like, they're very affordable, but they're permanent.
Yes.
So we can kind of feel safe.
I think so. Then I bought two five trains with the second company and then later sold one of them to the first, well, the other company that I floated. The company that I floated after I dumped the purple one, I mean. So I basically dumped that purple one, had two companies and managed to get a permanent train for each of them. So just with the timing of when the dumping happened and the train rush kind of happened.
Yeah, I had another one of those games where I ended up with three companies because I took over Simon's Brown company. You dumped the purple one on me and I had one of my own that I'd been building for a while. And it was one of those games again where I'm like, oh God, I've got to try and make all three of these work. They're going to need a train. So oftentimes when you have a bunch of companies like that, that's when you're very scared about train rushes and things rusting. And so that was kind of my gameplay arc was kind of like, okay, I've got these three companies. How do I run their routes? How do I connect the routes together? And how do I like stop them from rusting and keep them afloat?
Yes.
It was very like a money management game for me.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, and I think these games play out very differently, right? Sometimes it's just about like connecting huge routes, or you know, sometimes it's about buying a little bit of stocks everywhere and playing very much a stock focused game. Sometimes it's getting money into the right companies at the right time. This game for me was very much sort of a managing treasuries game.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I was quite happy. I even pointed it out to you at the end of the game that both my two companies I had left at the end had very little money in their treasury.
Yes.
Which I think is quite efficient. It means like I basically spent all their money when they floated. I spent all their money on trains and towns. I built some stations as well. not to
unstash. Yeah, that was like me, you know. I was like, I think I need to withhold and buy a new train, and I did it once and then realized it wasn't going to be worth it.
Right.
And that like 250 or 300 just sat in my treasury staring at me.
I did that in Cologne in the two-player game we had.
And it just sits in your treasury the rest of the game staring at you, just not doing anything. You feel bad for your horrible decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Simon's game I thought was quite interesting as well.
Mm.
So he kind of struggled a bit in the beginning. It felt like he was kind of floundering. And what was interesting about what he did was he did a huge amount of withholding.
He did, yes.
He did a lot of withholding and it almost worked, but the timing was just not quite right. So he had two companies. After he lost the brown one, he had these other two companies and they both were almost, I think, like fresh companies that he started, and they just withheld, withheld, withheld. You know, they had good roots and the roots got better and better. And then he had this huge upsurge because he took all that withholded money, bought these trains, and the whole time he'd been laying track, and suddenly those companies were paying a crap load.
Yes.
Like, I think one of the roots was like 600 and the other one was like 450, somewhere around there. He had really, really big roots.
Yeah.
And what was quite interesting was that we had ignored those companies because they were trash for so long.
Yes.
And that he... So another interesting niggle in Rhineland we haven't even mentioned is you can own 100% of the company, which changes things a lot. Because you've got... It's weird. You've got this partial cap thing where you don't want to invest in your own company and lose out on revenue. But there's kind of a race.
Because
if you can get 100% of a company and get that company to pay out, that can be a game-winning position for you.
Yeah.
Because you are the only person who can invest in that company, and that's just massive dividends, right?
Yeah.
So, but with Simon, he got like 70 or 80% or something in each of those companies. He had a huge stake in each of them.
Mm.
And suddenly the dividends were massive.
Yes.
He was reaching over and taking like 350, 400 in dividends. Yeah. And I was like, yo.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was cool. Yeah.
And I think that if that game had carried on for another two, three sets of ORs, he might have won. But what ended up happening was that while his dividends were huge from all the withholding, his share prices were so low that at the end of the game, he ended up about 1,000 behind, I think.
He didn't get a lot for those shares, so I think the score difference, I think he was about 1-4 behind me and you were about, I don't know, 800 behind me or something like that.
Something like that, I think,
Which is still surprising to me. I mean, to me, that feels so close. So...
Yeah,
my score was 9,900 and something, and 800 off that doesn't feel like a lot.
No, I mean, I guess if you think about it, it's less than 10%, right?
Yeah, and we were doing such vastly different things.
Yeah.
And we're still so close in score, which is...
I love how exciting the scoring is at the
end. It was super exciting.
Because we'd really had no idea who'd won. Like, I think everyone felt like they might have a chance at winning. And so we're all just adding up all our money and all our shares. And
yeah, it was very close. Yeah. As Simon at one point said, I think I've got this. And then he looked at my money and he's like, oh, you've got quite a lot of money.
Yeah, that's quite a lot of brown 500 chips there.
No, that was cool. But so just looking at my notes again. So towards the end of the game, that company that has three certificates worth 20% each is also super powerful, I think, because of the certificate limits. So I had all three of those certificates. And so that's already 60% in the company. Plus I had three other certificates. So I had 90% in that company. And that company were... So those two companies, after I dumped Purple, were both doing pretty well. The one was doing better than the other. And they were both kind of laying track for each other to help each other out and things
and
like
that. And the 20% one also had a bit of a late game surge, if I remember correctly as well.
Yeah. So that was the one that got the East-West bonus, right?
Yes.
So that's a plus 80 every time it ran a route, which was big. And my other company helped it get there by laying track and upgrading track and things like that. But I think allowing me to have 90% of that company is a potential mistake by you guys. Yeah, you could have each bought, like, even if you each just buy one share in that company, that affects me quite severely.
Especially if it's a 20% share.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of those things, right, where... And I don't know if it's just the rules overhead, right, or all these new things to digest, but I think the nuance of that was kind of lost on us at the beginning. We were kind of like, this one has 320% shares. And we're like, oh, that's cool.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
But we both hit the certificate limit by the end of the game.
Exactly.
And I have 30% more because I have all three of those certificates.
Exactly. And those are the kind of arcs that you need to be able to see, right? That's where that 20% thing, like you say, is huge.
Yes, yeah.
And 18XX is a game of small advantages that snowball.
Yeah, it is. You just need a little bit of an edge every single operating round, and you're going to make a lot. So,
yeah, so you basically having three extra shares is pretty massive.
It is, yeah.
Because, yeah. I mean, that's easily like, let's say, 350-ish in stock price potentially, plus all the dividends that would pay out over a set of... I mean, that share limit becomes... pretty massive.
It does, because you still had money, but you hit the share limit, so you couldn't buy anything more. So, yeah, no, that definitely becomes a factor. I think we each should have had one of those 20% certificates. But it's also, then you're prone to, like, you're open to someone dumping it on you, which
you that's might true, want to avoid. So, you can just own one, and you can't actually avoid it being dumped, which is another interesting thing.
Yeah.
Because 20% is always that danger zone.
Yeah. But I think as soon as, like, there comes a point in these games, for me anyway, so far, where everyone is just going to run routes and pay dividends. Now it just becomes about getting as much money out of the bank into your pocket as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a timing element there that's very tricky.
Yes.
Is when have you hit that point and when have you not hit that point and someone's going to dump this company on you and quickly shift all their trains to the other one. And
Yeah,
so it can be hard to sometimes figure that out. And I think that's the thing, right? I find that in these games, we do have these metagames that sort of develop and then get shattered. So now we might say, okay, once permanents are out, then no one's going to dump a company.
No.
And then someone looks until and they're like, does. I've actually got two really good routes with this. Even though it's got a permanent train, I could put another permanent train in here and just dump this other company right now.
Yes.
That would put Chris in a really bad spot. You know, and then that metagame kind of goes out the window. Because frequently, I mean, your companies won't necessarily all have two permanent trains. Often there'll be one with one or a couple with one.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you could quite easily just be shifting things around. And
yeah, I think at the end of the game, my two companies each only had one permanent, one train.
What I did like about this play, and I don't know if this is a testament to this game necessarily or just how it was, but this game felt like things were happening all the way until the end.
Yes.
We've reached that point in other games where we were sort of just running out to the bank.
Yeah, not building any new routes. But this one, we were actually still building new routes at the end of the game. Even stations. And I think I did a late game station deployment and you guys had to reroute. So you were still building track and I was still building track at the end of the game. Yeah, it was still things were happening. Like the corporations were actually still improving at the end
of the game. Yeah, the map is pretty awesome in that way. There's a lot of different routes that you can take. There's a lot of bonuses to consider. And there's a few interesting niggles there as well. Hey, like there's that one private that Simon had that lets him place that one tile down. And this is an orange tile that can never be upgraded.
And it only has one station spot.
Exactly. And when you place it, you can place a station there for free.
And that area of the board was central to pretty much all the routes.
That area of the board, when he placed it, I was like, oh, whatever. I'm just going to go around this. I don't give a crap, whatever. And then it just ended up ruining my life. Repeatedly over and over again.
Yeah, I also had to route around it. Yeah,
yeah, I tried to route around and then those got blocked off. The tokening in this game felt hectic. There were a lot of stations and not necessarily a lot of station spots.
Yeah, oh, that reminds me, just before I dumped purple, I don't know if you noticed this, but just before I dumped the purple company on you, I built a station with it just so that you couldn't build it anywhere. Built it somewhere where it doesn't affect me. Just so that it was...
I was so flabbergasted you dumped it on me. I don't even think I noticed that. I was like, what?
So you got it with no stations left to build, which...
Just insult to injury. Cool.
Yeah, I'd also spend some of its money before you get it.
Yeah. That's kind of the thing, eh? Like right before you give up a company, you just want to drain its treasury.
Exactly, yeah. Even if it doesn't come to me, it just shouldn't be available for you to use.
What I find is particularly brutal... what I've realized is that if you dump a company on someone without leaving them a single dollar, that is a huge difference.
Yes, because then they can't buy a train from another company.
That's what I did to Rudy that one time. And I remember him saying, God, if I just had $1.
Well, he did that to me as well.
Mm.
And it was so... Just that $1 makes the world of difference.
No, because you can't juggle a train anymore. You've got nothing. It's emergency buy and that's it.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you can't pony up, you're out. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I thought was interesting about this one is tile scarcity wasn't a thing in this one. Like, we never really struggled to find a tile we needed.
I think you're right. Did we struggle with tiles?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. But we were upgrading a lot. So that freed up all the yellow ones, the first ones?
Yes, yeah.
So that freed up all the yellow tiles. So there were always, like, when you build a new tile, it's a yellow one. And they were always available because we were doing a lot of upgrades.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think it's probably because the map is so contended anyway that I guess they just didn't want to add an extra element of map contention.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Because, yeah, and I find that these games create competition in different spaces. You know, 1830 has a lot of tile scarcity, and that can be a serious issue. And quite a big open map.
Yes.
This map is very tight. There's a lot of bonuses. There's a lot of stuff to compete for. The coal mills, the steel mills, the off-board routes.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it felt like a lot of those tiles by design couldn't necessarily be upgraded into a tile with more city spots. So some of the green ones were maxed out in city spots.
Yes.
The tokening in this game was brutal.
It was, yeah.
You were dropping stations that were just ruining my life all the time.
Oh, that must have been an accident, sorry.
And I thought that I had these good routes planned out. And like you said, you know, I was like, oh, I'm ready. Okay, I'm going to run these routes. These are routes I'm going to do for the rest of the game, et cetera, et cetera. And then, nope. Another station goes down. I found the companies had quite a lot of stations as well. A lot of them had three or four.
Yes, most of them.
Which is quite a lot for quite a small map.
Yes.
So the tokening game in this is very, very hectic. And I think it's all about blocking those various bonus routes and offboards and all that kind of stuff. Because they do pay big.
Yeah.
And obviously you're skipping towns as well.
Yes.
So there's a lot of the stuff. I guess you can see how he's stripped out some of the competition and some of the difficulties and then added them in somewhere else.
Yes.
So it just sort of changes the whole texture of how that board plays out. Like you can skip towns. This is a free fall. Look at all these bonuses. Oh, tiles? Nah, we got plenty of those.
Yes.
You know, and then meanwhile, every corporation has like four stations and there's only 3 points you can cross this river.
Yes.
And then it got very brutal. But I enjoyed it, actually. I find the tokening game quite fun because you can always do something and it just reduces the value of your route. It doesn't necessarily, I mean, you're not going to go from earning 300 to earning zero.
No, but it's also, it's a little bit of opportunity cost, I think, because when you have to reroute, you're doing that instead of maybe doing something else.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a brutal part of the game. It definitely sets you back. But it also doesn't feel, I don't know, I guess it doesn't feel as bad as I might have expected it to.
Yeah, it's not the end, it's not bankruptcy or anything like that, yeah.
Yeah. There's something about it that feels like palatable. You're just like, oh, you son of a bitch.
Yes. Yeah, and you come up with a plan and you work around it and it's doable, but it costs you some time. Yeah.
And I find most 18XX conflict is like that. Like, these games are super mean. There's actually a ton of conflict in them, but oftentimes in like a five-hour game, conflict that kind of goes badly can kind of ruin the game for you.
Yes.
So like in Twilight Imperium or something, right? Like some people get frustrated because there's a like element to the combat or whatever. And they can like lose their whole fleet that they spent the last like 4 hours building. And it's like, God, I've invested so much time into this game and now I'm here. And ACXS doesn't actually feel like that to me that much.
No. This game does, it does say bankruptcy doesn't end the game though. So I guess that's possible.
Right, yeah, that would be a bit of a feel bad. But I suppose you could kind of end it anyway if you wanted to.
You probably could. Maybe by that time there's a runaway leader anyway. So.
I don't really understand the nuances of the rules of why some games will end on bankruptcy and some won't.
No, I don't think we've seen enough bankruptcies to have figured that out yet.
Yeah, I don't really know what the reasoning behind that is. But I prefer bankruptcy ends the game because I think it's kind of a fun way.
It is a cool way to end the game. Yeah.
Yeah. And then people are like, oh, crap. And it's kind of another thing you have to plan for because you have to kind of, it's like you can sometimes tell that someone's going to dump a company and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yes.
But the other people have to also be able to kind of,
yeah.
Or maybe even like Fred hasn't seen it, but Simon's totally going to dump this company on him in a couple of rounds. And maybe start to plan for that? I don't know. I mean, do you...
You might have to.
Do you plan around the bankruptcy if it is going to end the game?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't withhold.
Yeah, don't withhold.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if that's kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we've seen enough bankruptcies yet.
I think the more predictable kind of bankruptcy is when you can see someone's chains are going to rust and you get a feeling that they're not going to be able to cope with it.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, if you can think this guy's not going to be able to buy trains for all those companies.
Yeah.
And then you got to kind of think, okay, time to cash up.
Yes. Yeah. That's all of my notes. I don't know if there's anything else.
Yeah, so I think what struck me about the game, I know I touched on it earlier, was that we all had very different arcs. And I think that was really cool.
It was, yeah. That surprised me as well. Like, I mean, we're all playing the same game, but we were doing vastly different things. Like you were saying, Simon was just withholding. And then he ran these massive routes for the second half of the game, which is completely different to what we were doing. And we all were fairly close in score, I think. So.
And I think that's what Simon likes to do as well.
Yes.
I think he likes playing it almost a little bit Euro-ish, where he has these two companies and he's going to get money in the treasury and he's going to run these amazing routes and get a bunch of dividends and he's going to run them as best as he can.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like he's still kind of in that phase. Yes. But I also think that's kind of what he likes to do.
Yes. Yeah, which is fine. Yeah.
Yeah, and I ended up just with these three companies that I was trying to juggle and kind of make work. My big focus was basically keeping the stock prices high on all of them. Yeah. Because I own big chunks of all of them, I was just like, you know what? Always pay dividends as much as you can. So I didn't put a lot of time into like trying to get them better trains.
Yeah.
As soon as they were safe, I'm just like, it's fine.
You know, I don't think I withheld once in that game. Not once.
That is very interesting.
I never withheld on the purple because I built that share price up and then I dumped it when it couldn't afford a train. And then the other two that I floated bought... Yeah, permanents. Well, the one bought the four and then later a permanent from my other company. So I never withheld once in that game.
And that is, I think, the ideal, right? Because you only really need to withhold a lot of the time in order to buy permanents.
Yes.
You know, I feel like often withholding is kind of a necessity. But I've heard players say that they will plan to never withhold and they'll actually... opt for an emergency train buy by choice.
Right, yeah.
So they will not withhold and they will plan around like, I'm going to spend my own money on a train.
Which kind of like, whether you get that money into your own pocket by paying dividends or whether you get that money into the company's treasury, doesn't really matter where you spend it from. But if you're paying dividends, you're upping the share price in the meantime. So that kind of makes sense. Like withholding obviously gets you more money than paying dividends because unless you have 100% of the company, you won't get all that money.
And especially in this game, right? I mean, if you did own 100% share of a company in this game,
yeah,
there'd be no difference between withholding and paying
dividends. No, absolutely not. No, if you had 100%, you should just
pay dividends. So then you could keep raising the share price. And also, it's less uneven, right? So when you withhold, you don't get to choose how much.
Yeah.
So let's say I would make 300 every time and I need to spend 750.
Yeah.
I withhold three times, I buy a train, and then that leaves 150 left in my treasury.
Yes.
But if that was going into your personal,
yeah,
you would have exact amount. You wouldn't lose that 150.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's better to have that money in your personal money than sitting in the treasury at the end of the game, not doing anything.
Which is interesting because this game has an interesting niggle with the being able to hold 100% thing.
Yes.
I think that's interesting because it sort of challenges our idea that in partial cap, you don't want to buy your own shares.
Yeah.
Because you want to get more money and whatever. Because there is an argument to be made for basically filling it up, buying cheap trains, running four different routes with cheap trains.
Mm.
And when it comes time to buy a permanent... you just pay it for yourself, but you own 100% of that company and you raise that share price the entire game.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't know.
That could be something. That could be something to try.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's always a great thing about these games, right? The more you think about it, the more you think,
yeah,
I want to try that. But
I don't think you should let anyone get 100% of anything in this game.
No, probably not. You shouldn't
allow that to happen.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But I suppose even if you own 80, I don't know.
Well, yeah. So I think I had, I can't remember exactly. I know I had 90% of my one company at the end of the game. And I think I had like 70 or 80% of the other one. And then I had some shares in you and Simon's companies.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So this is where the tiny rules changes completely change how these games play out or challenge what you think you know about these games.
Mm.
So if literally this game was just a partial cap game, like, so let's say you play 1846 and now you just change it to you can own 100% of a company.
Yeah.
The only change you make.
Yeah.
Now, how does it change that game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting. I think that would be something interesting to try once you know a game like one 18xx super well, is to make a little change like that and see how it affects things.
Yeah, and it might just totally break the game, and you realize why you don't design 18xx, is you just play them.
But it would I think it would show you what to look out for when you come across that rule.
It'd like be a good lesson.
Let's say for example we take Cologne. Let's say we know Cologne super well and Cologne is full cap.
Right.
Let's say we have 100 plays of it or whatever, and then we change it to partial cap. I think we would then really understand what full cap versus partial cap means and how it should affect your strategy when you approach a new 18xx, whether it's full cap or partial cap.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, and it will show you how it impacts the game design as well.
Yeah. I think that could be something interesting to try.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Sure, we just are so far from... I'd love to have 100 plays of Cologne, though.
Well, one day.
I really want to play 1889 two-player again.
1889 two-player? Yeah.
Because we had that amazing two-player game of it, and now I want to see...
Oh, I'd like to play that or Cologne two-player again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I'll play anything two-player again, but I really want to see like how it holds up. I want to see if it does it again, if it delivers...
Yes.
Again, that well.
We played that before we played Cologne, right? So yeah, it's a while back, I think.
We played the two player version after we played Cologne two player.
Oh, did we? Okay.
Yeah, we played the two player right before we recorded the podcast on two player.
Oh, right. But then okay.
That was the one where I had like six companies with four trains in them. And then we were discussing how you could have actually forced an emergency buy on yourself.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
The one that got away.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to play that one again for sure.
Yeah, but I feel like you buried the lead here, that you won 18 round, and I thought you were going to lead with that.
Oh, I wasn't going to brag too much. But I was happy with that win.
It was
so close. It was so tight. And I was very happy with the way I played.
I also think that you thought you were pretty convinced you had it. And then the last few hours, you got scared. You were like, wait a minute, Chris, what is going on here?
Yeah, I did get scared. I did think in the middle of the game, I thought, I'm doing well. Like everything is going according to plan. I'm doing well. But then towards the end of the game, I was getting a bit scared. Yeah, because you were doing some big payouts. Your share prices were going up.
I think for me, it was the share prices, right? Yeah. My share prices were super high.
They were higher than mine, yeah.
Yeah, I had like 60 or 70% of the two highest share price companies.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I think when we were doing the final scoring, you're like, those both your kind. Ooh, crap. And you're like, yes. No.
Yeah. No, I wasn't sure at the end of the game, but
Yeah, that was tight.
No, I was happy with that win, I must say. Yeah.
I felt good in the middle of our three-player game of Cologne, and somehow lost that one too. Yeah, you've started to rack up the wins, eh?
Yeah. Ooh,
it's getting scary.
Yeah. But none of them have been runaway wins, so.
No. No, we haven't had any of that yet.
No, we haven't really just called the game because we're all still in it, but there's clearly no way for us to
catch up. We did it once in 1846. We were like, I mean, we were pretty deep into the game.
Yeah, we were quite deep into
it. Yeah, but it was clear that Simon had won.
Yes, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because he actually brought it up, and then I looked and I was like, you definitely have, yeah. I mean, there's no ways.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh, another game we should play again.
Yes, we should, Would be fun to go back to 46 where it started for us.
So when you say you think Cologne is your favorite that you've played overall so far?
I think so, yes.
I'm
itching to play that one again. I would love to play all of them again, but I really want to play Cologne again.
I really want to play a four-player Cologne.
We haven't played it with Rudy yet, right?
No.
So we must play with Rudy, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really, really keen to make a four-player of that happen.
We've only played a two- and three-player.
Yeah, I think a four player would be really cool. I really want to try that.
I think that should be the next one we do. If we can get all four together, we should play that one.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's my plan as well. I think that 18 Rheinland is too much.
It is. It took us a long time. Like, we can probably get the time down a bit, but I think just because there are all these little extra things and because, like we said, our companies were still improving and laying track at the end of the game. Like, we were still very, very active towards the end of the game. So that also probably adds to the time it takes.
Yeah, Rudy has not played nearly as much 18xx at this point, actually, anyway, right? Like, he's missed out on a few of them.
Yeah.
And so, like, for me, 18 Rheinland was like, this is a lot. There's a lot going on here.
There is a lot different.
Yeah. I almost feel like him having such a long break from the games and having not played Cologne, which adds some of those rules and stuff as well, coming in, you'd just be like, oh my God, like, yeah. What have you guys been doing while I've been gone?
Yes. So Cologne for him would add the mergers. He hasn't had that before.
Yes, which is very
But cool. I think that's simple enough to...
Cologne's pretty simple. Yeah, the mergers are really cool. The minor companies are really cool.
Yeah.
But it does it all in quite a neat little package. Mm,
yeah.
And it just has a few nice little niggles, like the bonds and stuff.
Yes.
It's just which a cool super little simple, yeah. thing. Yeah, yeah, but it's just, it is simple.
None of them are difficult to understand or explain, so... Yeah, yeah, no, I think that would be cool if we could do a four-player Cologne.
Yeah, so I think Rhineland is one of those ones that we'll definitely revisit it.
Oh, yes.
I think that we'll definitely play Cologne next again. And it's one that I feel like is going to sit on the shelf for a little bit, in the sense that, like, there's another group that I've played 18XX with, but I've only played 1889 with them. And okay. I would not dump Rhineland on them right now.
No.
It just, they've played one play of 1889 and that's it. And it just feels like too much. And I feel like I still have quite an appreciation for the purity of like an 1889, you know, yes. like I really enjoyed that five player game I played of it.
Yeah.
And I think I still like the sort of pure 18XX experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more you've played games like that, the more it's easy to handle extra chrome and extra bits tacked on all that kind of stuff.
I agree with that. Yeah, the more you've got the basics down, the easier it is to add something on top
Absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely. And Rhineland was really fun and really good. I mean, I think it's a very accomplished design.
Mm.
I mean, from what little experience I have, but it felt like jeepers. I don't know if I need this much extra stuff right now almost, you know? Yeah. But, I mean, I really like it. I'm glad I have it.
I'll definitely play it again. Awesome game. Excellent game.
But I feel like I almost want to do a few more cycles of the other ones and then kind of come back to it again.
Yeah. Yeah, we might, after we've done that, we might see things a little bit differently in Rhineland.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's always the thing. And it's always this thing of you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
So sometimes we talk about these games and we're like, yeah, I wonder how we could have done it. And then I'll be driving in the car, like
days later.
Yeah, and it was sort of, I'll be like, oh my word, we could have just done this.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happened with that 1889 plan. I felt so stupid because we spent this whole time discussing it and what like a cool scenario it was or whatever. Yeah. Meanwhile, anyone who's played a lot was probably like, oh my God, you could have just bought the train.
Yeah, could have forced the train, yeah.
Yeah, and when I thought of it, I was like, oh, we're so dumb. That's so obvious.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things, right, where...
Yeah. At the moment, we didn't think of it, yeah.
No, I think it's because we also just played it as well when we recorded that.
Yes, yeah.
And I think it's just, yeah, you just get so invested in the different levers that you can pull and stuff that sometimes you just don't see the big red button.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I've got a bit of a one-track mind.
Oh, my word.
What your strategy should be.
Oh, yeah. So that was 18 Ryan, and I think... really, really good. If you are someone who, I imagine most of the people listening to this are probably fairly new.
Yeah, I don't think it should be your first 18XX.
Or maybe even your second or third. Mm. That being said, it could be your second if you played the first one a bunch.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's very much a step up.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah.
In terms of complexity, in terms of stuff going on, in terms of things that you need to understand, it feels definitely like it was a step up for me.
Yes,
in complexity in terms
it's a,
of what
it's a fun like. Step up, but there's a lot more to take Absolutely. Into account and learn and stuff.
And it's not that you can't handle it. It's not that it's too many rules or anything like that. Mm. It's just a lot to kind of process, and the strategy. You just feel like, yo, am I doing this right? Or yo, I forgot about this, and oh my word, I hadn't considered that. And it's just one of those kind of things, you know.
Yeah.
It was like 5 hours, and we were like pretty wrecked after that.
It was about 5 hours. Right?
I think because it was so there was so much going on until the end. You know, like you laid a station. I was like, oh, I thought I was just gonna run my routes. Okay, time to replan.
Yeah, that was a satisfying station. That was the east west route. Station.
Yeah, and you just went boop, and I was like, oh,
and I got a few operating rounds, being the only one. Being able to run that route, so yeah.
And I think that's the thing. I think because there's so much going on, you're not necessarily paying attention to everything that you should be.
Mm.
So it felt like we almost didn't get the full fat 18 run and experience because... But I suppose that's always going to be like that with your first of anything.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is for people listening to this who are probably new, I think the people who aren't new gave up after the 1889. No, I'm just kidding. Let me not be too hard on ourselves. But yeah, I think that if you are one of those people, I would say... Don't go here first.
No.
I think it's just going to be too much. And I think there's actually a lot of joy. I mean, even for veterans, there's a lot of joy to extract from the pure experiences. But I just don't think you need this level of chrome just yet.
No.
It's very well done. This is a game that's it's one of Wolfram Janik. He's a German guy, yeah. But he publishes and designs games on Marflow Games, and it's one of his designs. But it's also, it started life as like 1838 Rhineland, and then it became 18 Rhineland, and now it's in like its third edition. So it's been refined and rules changed, and a lot of stuff has been done to it. And I think it shows. It feels pretty well put together.
Yes, yeah.
But it's a lot.
But fun.
Yeah, so I think we did an episode on best like introductory 18xx, huh?
Yeah, we pretty much covered that in the first episode, I think we talked about.
Did we? Okay.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Yeah,
I think we kind of touched on it.
A few times, yeah. But not this one. that's, I guess that's the summary. Yes. So yeah, I guess I'm just trying to summarize our thoughts, I suppose, which is that it was excellent, but even for us, we're ready to put it on the shelf for a little bit and go back to some of the other ones and then sort of
especially
revisit it
on a school night.
Yeah, especially on a school night, exactly.
Yeah,
I think it could be a short playing game, I think, but it doesn't feel as short as the other ones.
No,
I think even for us who are not necessarily the fastest players when it comes to 18xx, 1889 and Cologne both felt doable on a school night, whereas this less so. So I guess we can finish off there.
Yes.
Fred, what is our Instagram?
It's a derailed 18xx, all one word, 18xx. So derailed 18xx.
Right. We've got that continuity. Eh? So the Twitter is also at derailed 18xx. And the email address is derailed 18xx at gmail.com.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks. Cheers.